Welcome to Absolutely Intercultural show number 10, and an especially warm welcome to Anya Gertheiser from Germany and Ruba Awada from Lebanon. They added themselves to our Frapper map, and you can add your name so that we have an idea where our listeners are. Just go to our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and click on the map. My name's Anne Fox. I'm based in Denmark, and I promise that I won't sing.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Coming up first in our absolutely personal slot, we'll have one person's experience of what it's like arriving in a place that you know virtually nothing about. What does that really feel like? Then we'll hear what a South African thought of the first Danes he met in our absolutely national slot. And finally, I think we need a new slot, perhaps absolutely inspired, to describe individuals or groups who've done something active to promote intercultural understanding. I'll be talking to Michel Vid, who had a novel idea for adapting the dating company concept to promote dialogue between different communities. So, let's go straight to our first feature, where we'll hear a personal testimony about the psychological effects of being immersed in a totally different culture. Mark Anderson from South Africa talks about what it feels like arriving in a completely new and unknown culture. Mark has written in more detail about his experiences, and you'll find a link to his article in the show notes.
My name is Mark Anderson. I'm a web writer at the Human Sciences Research Council in Pretoria, South Africa. At the time, I was working in South Africa, and I was working on a contract basis. And towards the end of my contract, I realized that it's going to be very hard for me to get another job in South Africa. So I applied for a job in Korea. And I got this job in Korea, and I just went to Korea without really doing any research about the country. And yeah, my first day in Korea was really, as I say in the article, it felt like I was, I found myself on the moon suddenly. It was a completely alien and foreign environment. I remember the first day walking down to the supermarket to get something to eat. And none of the foods in the supermarket looked vaguely familiar. You know, there's nothing that I really could recognize there. And everything is written in Korean, and nobody speaks English. So you couldn't ask anyone, you know, what is this that I'm buying? Because no one could explain it to you. So the only thing you could do was to buy the thing and take it home and taste it. Some other things, for example, the streets had no names. And yeah, that was the first time that I really experienced this thing called culture shock. And it was a couple of months later that I read that culture shock is actually a phenomenon. It's a psychological phenomenon. Everybody experiences this when they visit a foreign country, or when they find themselves in a foreign environment. Yeah, I just looked it up on the internet, really, and I found out that there are four stages of culture shock. There's the honeymoon phase, where you feel like everything is wonderful and everything is new, and you're all starry-eyed about, you know, this new place, the new culture, different looking people, and that lasts for about a couple of weeks. And then after a while, you start feeling a little bit homesick. You start to resent the fact that things are not quite the same as they are back home, that things are not as easy as they would be back home. For example, you can't just speak English to everybody. That's one thing. And yeah, after a while, you become really almost, you become a little bit aggressive, really, towards this new way of living. That is, you feel almost like it's imposed upon you. And then after about 3 months or so, you start to feel a sense of acceptance. You start accepting, and you realize that there's nothing really you can do about that. You know, that's just, you are in this set of circumstances, nothing you can do about it. You just got to accept it and adapt to it. Yeah, I don't really remember what all the phases are. I remember the last one, for example, is what is called reverse culture shock. That's when you go back home to your own country and you realize that things have changed so much that you don't really, you know, the person that you were when you left and the person that you are now coming back is not really the same. Your friends treat you a little bit differently, and you just have a totally different perspective, really, on your own country.
So you can feel a really tangible psychological reaction to being immersed in a completely different culture. I think that the last stage of reintegration back into the original culture is an aspect often forgotten in discussion of the culture shock phenomenon. Mark's example of not recognizing anything in the supermarket reminded me of the time I bought what I thought was a strawberry ice lolly when I was in China 3 years ago. A closer look at the wrapper, after I had found the whole thing rather chewy, revealed a totally unexpected main ingredient, and if you want to know what it is, then you'll just have to go to our weblog, where I've added a picture of the wrapper to help you solve that puzzle. We love to hear from you, and you can write or send us an audio message to contact@absolutely-intercultural.com, or you can also add comments to our blog in the webpage. Now, I'm doing a little catching up here because 2 shows back we talked a lot about the meaning of flags, and Lon from North Carolina left us a comment on the blog with his interesting bit of history about the American flag. He told us, "As far as protecting the flag, there was once a law in the state of Louisiana that reduced the penalties for assault if the person being assaulted was burning a flag. That is, you might be fined $500 and have to go to jail if you beat someone. But if that person was burning a flag, you might be fined $25 and not go to jail." Actually, Lon, I think that qualifies for our absolutely incredible but true slot. If you have something to say about any of our featured stories, then please feel free to add your voice to our blog. Back now to Mark Anderson from South Africa. I first met Mark a couple of years ago when he was living in Denmark. How does a South African end up in Denmark? There are a couple of clues when you hear the impression Danes made on Mark when he was still living in Cape Town.
My relationship with Denmark is a very complex one. It started when I met a Danish guy by the name of Mads, and I slowly became involved with his friends, the small Danish circle that existed in Cape Town at the time. And I found these people extremely interesting for many reasons, one of them being the sense of equality and egalitarianism that existed among them. One day, for example, we went to pick up a Dane at the airport. He just arrived from Denmark. And I went with Mads and a few other people. And when we met this guy at the airport, I really got the sense of they know each other. They had this kind of familiarity about them. And it was only afterwards, later that evening, that I realized that they'd actually never met this guy before. And there's something that you'd never find really with South Africans. You know, South Africans would, in the first place, you know, if I meet a South Africa in a foreign country, first of all, I'd like to know, you know, where do they come from, and are they white or black? And, you know, I'd like to know as much about them as possible. And even then, I would still approach them with a little bit of suspicion. And this is something I was completely, absolutely lacking with a Dane. And it's one of the reasons I found them quite fascinating. It's like they were almost like family. That's exactly the impression I got at the time, was that they were just one big extended family. Yeah, going to Denmark, a lot of these perceptions about the Danes started changing, but it took a long while, actually, because your first impressions you have of people, they tend to kind of stick with you for quite a while, no matter how much the contrary is proven to you. Yes, I suppose it was when I started having to deal with the Danish bureaucracy, the Danish system, and all that sort of thing, that my eyes were slowly opened to the fact. And it had a lot to do with the language also, because for the first 6 months or the first year or however long it takes to learn Danish, you are in a sense shrouded by your own perceptions, because you don't really understand what people are talking about, and you don't know how people are really interacting with each other. And that kind of gives them a superhuman quality, I suppose, because you don't really see them as human beings. There's no way in which you can relate to them. on that linguistic level. So the only thing you have to fall back on is your own illusions, your own perceptions of you know, of the people. And it slowly dawns on you as, and of course, as I said, the language has a lot to do with it. The more you learn of the language and the more you realize, you know, these people are pretty much the same as everyone else. It might sound a bit strange that you might think that, you know, wouldn't that be natural that everyone is the same? But you must remember that I also come from a background where everybody is not the same. And I was 29 when I left South Africa for the first time with a lot of ideas about people and about the world already being fairly set.
Can you usefully say the Danes are such and such and South Africans are such and such? Do you notice these differences?
I think yes and no. Let's start with a yes. You can say that the Danes are like this and South Africans are like that. You can say that if you take into consideration that we are basically different in terms of how our cultures define us. And I think that this is really the heart of the matter, is that it's not really about people when two cultures kind of connect. Going to Denmark, much of what I am and much of what I believe myself to be has really been constituted by people around me and my culture, or in South Africa what would probably be my subculture. And here I'm referring to my so-called coloredness. And going to Denmark, it would be really my coloredness interacting with what the Danes have, whatever they want to call it, their Danishness. So it's really a culture clash, if you want to call it that. So yeah, to answer your question, you cannot really generalize about people. You can say, if you want to talk about people, you have to take it down to the individual level and say this person is different from that one. But in this context, we're speaking more really about culture, the wider context in terms of which people identify with.
I think it's interesting that it was quite a banal observation about how Danes greet each other that left Mark with such a lasting impression. One of the themes which I think is running through our podcasts is the importance of dialogue in intercultural understanding. And another running theme is that you often don't even have to travel to meet with other cultures. In many European countries, and probably elsewhere in the world, immigrant communities can live for years without really meeting the host community. No wonder, then, that walls of misunderstanding build up, so that in the end, no one dares to breach them. Earlier this year, we saw on Danish TV the progress of a really inspired idea for getting the various cultural communities in Denmark to meet. I talked to the instigator of the project, Michelle Witt.
My name is Michelle and I'm 34 years old and I live in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Now, Michelle, you had a brilliant idea earlier in the year. It was called Vigtigt, which in Danish means important. So what was important?
Yes, the idea was, I've got a company that makes some dinners called running dinners, and the whole idea behind a running dinner is to make a lot of dinners in one evening, which can get a lot of people together in a short period of time. And it means that every person who participates in the dinner has three different courses at three different apartments in one evening. Every single person participating will eat with 18 different people in one night. And my idea was to use this as an integration thing so that I would get the new Danish people, the new Danish citizens, and the old native Danish citizens to eat together, to get to know each other.
Why did you have this idea that this needed to be done?
Because I bought a new apartment in a part of Copenhagen which is known to be one of the areas in Copenhagen where the integration has not been so successful.
I think it was a brilliant idea that marrying what you do, which is essentially a dating service,
exactly,
to something which benefits people who are new to Denmark. You say that there's a problem that the new Danes don't seem to meet the old Danes.
Actually, the government made a survey just last week and they asked a lot of people, have you ever been in close contact, meaning have you ever had a longer conversation with, for instance, a Muslim? And I think it was 80% of the Danish population who said no, never.
How was the response?
The response was not as well as I hoped, but it turned out a success, and we ended up being a total of around 900 people altogether, around 450 Danish people and 450 new Danes. And the 900 people who participated had the most wonderful evening.
Are there any stories that you've heard about that evening that particularly stand
out for
you?
There are several. I got one email from a Danish man who was, I think he was 76 or 74, and he said that he had had the image in his head that the media paints, which is not always very nice. And he was quite scared of the new Danes and all the things that the media always tell about what they do. His daughter signed up, and she convinced her parents to sign up for this. And they actually did, and they had a dinner at their house where they had four foreign people and two other Danish people, and then, of course, him and his wife. And he said that it was the most wonderful evening, and it turned out to be one of the biggest experiences of their lives.
That must make you feel that it was all worthwhile.
Exactly, exactly. And I had another incident. I had to get a new passport for my son, and I went to we've moved into this new area now. So now when I go to my local police station, I go to one of the most hardest police areas in Copenhagen, because this is where there's a lot of crime because of all the integrations not working. And I went there just to pick up a new passport for my son. And the woman behind the counter, she asked me, so you're Michel Hvid? And I was like, yes, I am. And she said that they had actually had a meeting, all the people working at this police station, where they took all the subjects of my project and talked about it, to talk about how how you can do good things for the community. And for me, this is really important, because the police are some of the people who have a very hard time with the integration, because they see all the trouble all the time.
Do you have any other indications of the effect of your project?
Yes, I've got tons of them. I've got there was a group. I tried to, when I made the dinners, I tried to arrange that the most of the people who met lived quite close to each other. So if they wanted to, it would be easy for them to keep in contact. And a lot of these small local groups still keep in contact, and they have barbecue evenings in parks, and they still meet.
Oh, that's great, because that's the part that we never heard about, because the last television program was about the evening itself, and we didn't hear what happened after that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was also told by Jan Poulsen, who is the General Secretary of the Danish Red Cross, that the Red Cross all around the country has now taken up the idea, and they're making small dinners with Danish people and new Danes everywhere in Denmark now.
Yeah, it's a really heartwarming story. Do you think that it could work outside the boundaries of Denmark?
I'm sure it could. The thing is that the system behind it that makes it work, because a running dinner is quite complicated. If you make a running dinner with 1,000 people, you have to make 500 individual routes to 360 apartments. And this is what I do, and this is what I've done for 3.5 years. So I would say that the hardest part would be to make the whole logistics behind it work. But that's what I do. For me, that was the easy part. But for somebody else to take it up somewhere else, they should call me for help.
Okay. Yeah. Is it going to happen again, do you think?
I'm quite sure I'll make it again.
One thing that I'm a little upset about is that the website seems to have almost disappeared. It seemed to shrink to one page.
Yeah, which I find very sad as well. The whole thing about the website is turned into politics, because the advertising agency and all the people who helped me, they helped me for free. And after the project was closed, they didn't want to spend any more energy on the site.
Did you give some advice to people about what they should serve at the dinner?
Yes. Yes, we gave a lot of advice. The easy advice for people who had no clue was to serve either fish or birds, like chicken or something, because that's what everybody eats. But we had on the website, there was a whole page with examples of what to cook and how to prepare it. But actually, that was one of the major concerns before the project. But after the project, I never heard of anything anywhere that turned into a problem. But before we met, that was one of the biggest issues everybody was talking about. Oh, my God, what are we going to serve? How are we going to do this? And it never turned out to be a problem.
I'll tell you that I'm not Danish. I don't know if you guessed that.
I did.
I'm British, and one thing I've learned being in Denmark for 13 years is that you should take your shoes off when you go into a Danish house. And one of the funniest...
Not to my house. You'd never take your shoes out of my house.
Well, on the TV programme which showed the final dinner, I saw absolutely the opposite happening, that there was some Lebanese Danes worried mm-hmm. that the Danes wouldn't take their shoes off. And in fact, when they arrived, they didn't. And that, to me, was just so surprising because it's such a Danish thing for me. You're saying it's
not.
That's
funny. I've never thought about that. See, in my house, you should never take your shoes off because then you have to wash your socks when you get home. But definitely keep your shoes on. But I do know Danish people as well who ask you to take your shoes off when you arrive at the house.
Okay, maybe this is just a country thing then, because as you'll have gathered, I'm in the depths of Jutland and you are in
the
capital.
I'm in the, exactly.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So, now you know why I've had restaurant noises in the background throughout this podcast. Eating together is one of the most intimate things people can do together, and I think it was a stroke of genius putting this simple, everyday human act at the centre of an integration project. One of the things we didn't get to talk about was why there was an imbalance in the number of so-called new Danes signing up for the project compared to the number of old Danes. At one point, the project called a halt to accepting any more old Danes in an effort to give time for the number of new Danes to catch up. There could have been any number of reasons for this imbalance, one being pure statistics, because of course there are many more old Danes than there are new Danes. Could also have been that the new Danes were not accessing the mainstream Danish media to the same extent as the old Danes. And the whole booking process was internet-based, and that might have been another off-putting factor. But in fact, I think that the telling point was that the project made much more headway when they started approaching community leaders who could then recommend participation in the project within their own circles. Perhaps the Vigtigt project was wrong to concentrate on individual motivation when trying to recruit the new Danes. They should have recognised the importance of the larger community in those cultures earlier on. As a whole, I think the whole idea is ripe for transfer to other countries. Well, that's it for the time being. Our next show will be brought to you by the German station on the 11th of August. So, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.